In 2015, the BRICS New Development Bank recommended the use of national currencies in trade. 4 years later, the bank provided 25% of its $15 billion in financial assistance in local currencies and plans to increase this to 50% in the coming years.
The United States and yet again another shooting with mass fatalities. Around a dozen people were killed and about the same number were injured in a mass shooting in the largely Asian city of Monterey in Southern California. Eyewitnesses said the assailant opened fire indiscriminately with a semi-automatic weapon at an event in Monterey Park as the local community was celebrating Chinese Lunar New Year. Captain Andrew Mayer of L.A. Sheriff's Department said officers had responded to emergency calls at around 10:20 p.m. on Saturday and found people pouring out of the premises. He said the officers made entry to the location and located additional victims. Police say the victims were transported to numerous local hospitals and were listed in various conditions from stable to critical. Witnesses said there was a shooter with a machine gun who had multiple rounds of ammunition on him so he could reload. It is still unknown whether the suspect knew his victims or whether it was a targeted attack. Investigations are underway into the shooting to find out the motive behind it and whether or not the incident was a hate crime. But the factors that lead to tragedies like the one in Monterey Park are deeply ingrained in U.S. politics, culture, and law. As defined by the Gun Violence Archive, a mass shooting is an incident during which four or more people are shot. The Monterey incident is the 33rd such mass shooting that has taken place in the U.S. already since the beginning of this year. It follows shootings at an MLK Day celebration in Fort Pierce, Florida, and a shooting that killed six people in Goshen, California on that very same day. The Monterey shooting also follows numerous such events last year, including at a Walmart in Virginia, the one in Colorado Springs, Colorado, a shooting on a school bus allegedly targeting members of the University of Virginia football team, and a 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois last summer. The United States experienced 647 mass shootings last year, illustrating the severity of the issue with guns. The mass shootings in the U.S. come as no other country has suffered such a high death toll from gun violence. Every day, more than 110 Americans die at the end of a gun, including suicides and homicides, an average of more than 40,000 per year. In 2020 alone, more than 45,000 Americans died at the end of a gun, whether by homicide or suicide, more than any other year on record. In terms of the number of incidents, since 2009, there has been an annual average of 19 shootings in which at least four people are killed. The U.S. gun homicide rate is as much as 26 times that of other high-income countries. Its gun suicide rate is nearly 12 times higher. This, as gun control opponents have typically framed the gun violence epidemic in the U.S. as a symptom of a broader mental health crisis. Every country has people with mental health issues and extremists. Those problems aren't unique. What is unique in the U.S.'s expansive view of civilian gun ownership, ingrained in politics, in culture, and in the law since the nation's founding, and a national political process that has so far proved incapable of changing that norm. In terms of the number of guns in the U.S. and how they contribute to the related violence, one estimate from the Small Arms Survey found that there were approximately 390 million guns in circulation in the U.S. in 2018, or about 120.5 firearms per 100 residents. More recent data also suggests that gun ownership grew significantly over the last several years. One study published by the Annals of Internal Medicine in February found that 7.5 million U.S. adults, just under 3% of the population, became first new gun owners between January 2019 and April 2021. But what are the causes of gun violence in the U.S.? Easy access to firearms, a lack of comprehensive background checks and regulations, social and economic factors such as poverty, racism, and mental illness could be named as such. When it comes to the National Rifle Association, the NRA lobbies heavily against all forms of gun control and argues that more guns make the country safer. Despite years of financial woes and internal strife, the NRA remains the most powerful gun lobby in the United States, with a substantial budget to influence members of Congress on gun policy. In January, the NRA filed for bankruptcy as part of a fraud case against some of its own senior staff. Over the last several election cycles, the NRA and other organizations have consistently spent more on pro-gun rights messaging than their rivals in the gun control lobby. Who supports gun control? Despite widespread and vocal public outrage, often in the wake of gun violence, American support for stricter gun laws in 2020 fell to the lowest level since 2014, according to polling by Gallup. 52% of Americans surveyed said they wanted stricter gun laws, while 35% said they should remain the same. 11% surveyed said laws should be made less strict. Last year, Congress reached a deal on limited gun reforms for the first time in nearly 30 years, but the recent shootings underscored just how embedded gun violence is in the U.S. To the solutions. Some argue for stricter gun control laws, such as universal background checks, banning certain types of weapons, and increasing funding for mental health services. Others argue for a more permissive approach, such as loosening restrictions on gun ownership and emphasizing the importance of the Second Amendment.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the merciful, Salam, dear listeners, my brothers and sisters from every single corner in the world, wherever you are, I hope you're doing well. This is IRIB English Radio, and here is your favorite youth station. My name is Asma.
Choo-choo-ka-choo, it's the youth station for
yes.
You. That is
that's
our
the slogan.
Tagline. Right,
yes,
right
that's
there.
The tag. My name is Asma, and I'm glad to be at your service, sharing some priceless moments together here with us. We have
Muzaffar Haider.
Yes, we have our brother Muzaffar. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, though I have a little cold, but it's okay.
Inshallah, may Allah bless you and protect you, inshallah.
Yes, thank you very much. It's not Corona, though. Well, speaking of cold and sickness, there was a time in my life, I'm talking of my own personal experience right now, when I experienced a time, an era in my life where everything was falling apart and they were running out of my control. At the very beginning of the pandemic, my father got sick, like very sick, in a very bad way. And there was not much of knowledge about the sickness. And yet he got the worst form of it. And all we had to do was just praying. Beside our personal problems, there was a sickness and everything was just running out of control. I'm just thinking about some other people who are going through some exact situations like me. In those times, you really are hopeless. You don't know what you're going to do.
So I was talking to my friend and he was like really miserable. He was down, you know, he's one of those friends who's always upset, right? And I wanted to cheer him up. I said, listen, he was like, no, it's really bad right now. I was like, listen, just to give you some comfort, it's not just you that's suffering right now. The entire world is in like a bad place right now. And not to sound insensitive, like I understand that
that's sympathizing actually.
But it feels for me
at the moment it's very difficult for the one to understand that.
Right. But for me it was like, okay, it's almost like you feel a togetherness with others when you start to realize it in that way. Because sometimes, you know, you're in a difficult situation and nobody can understand it.
Yes, exactly.
But then I feel like in the Corona times, humanity's a very weird part of it has started to identify
to
itself.
Show up, yes.
Yeah, you know,
we're
it
all the same in the same.
Yeah,
boat.
We're all in the same boat. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. Doesn't matter if you're this or that. You know, we're
everyone
all
is vulnerable.
Ahsantum, ahsantum.
Recommendations for those who are feeling they're in a time that everything is falling apart and everything is going out of control and they don't know what they should do.
I want to say patience, but it would sound like so much of a cliche. Like, oh,
do you practice that?
I try, but I'm very impatient. If I'm being totally honest, you know,
I think everyone is so impatient.
وَخُلِقَ الْإِنسَانُ ضَعِيفًا.
Exactly.
We are
that's
just,
our essence.
We're very, very weak. You know, mankind has been created weak and we are, you know, a little bit of pressure and we buckle.
Yes, exactly.
And you know, one extraordinary thing that I really did experience just recently is I was going through a sickness, right? I was just sick.
Yes.
You know, that's all I was sick. And at one point, I was just like, astaghfirullah, I shouldn't even be saying this.
Yes, I know what because, you mean. That happens to everyone.
You know, I just felt like, God, why?
Yes.
For crying out loud, why? You know?
And right now, why right now?
But as soon as I said that, it kind of just stopped. And it was really bizarre because I actually felt that that was Allah's test and I had just failed.
Yes, that's true. You know? It happened to me too.
You know, and I wish I had not lost my temper. I wish I'd been more patient.
Yes, but that's very difficult.
It's very difficult.
Very difficult.
And before that, though, I was like, you know, Ya Allah, I want to be like Prophet Ayyub.
Yes.
You know, Prophet Ayyub
but
would
the
put
pressure,
through so many.
But the pressure, exactly when you say that, the pressure is more visible.
Uh-huh.
And then right after that, you would lose your temper.
Oh, yeah, you do. Practically speaking, it's a whole different story. And,
yes.
And most of us do fail. We can't put up with a little bit of tribulation in this world. You know, there's a hadith, sister, that says that those who pass away from here, right? They go into the barzakh. They go into the world of the grave.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will be wishing that they had been cut to pieces with scissors in this dunya.
God. Yes, yes.
Because of how much it would have alleviated their pains on that side.
Yes.
Get it right? So the more you suffer, pain really is a cleanser, especially over here.
Yes.
The more suffering you endure over here, the less you will...
There's a growth system behind that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe God's blessing comes through afflictions. The more you're going through pains, and the more God is taking you in his hands, in his arms, and the more you are going to have blessings. But at the difficult, at those miserable situations that you have, it's very difficult to understand that.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
days are going so hard and they look like every day looks like a century. So for a human being who is so weak and fibbling, it's very difficult to tolerate those situations.
When we wake up on that side, like after death, we are going to literally, life is going to feel like the twinkling of an eye or a single day.
Of course, yes.
And yet when you are in that moment of pressure and pain and suffering,
everything
it feels
seems,
like forever.
Yes,
it just feels like an eternity. I was actually talking to a youth just last night. I was trying to explain to this youth about the existence of hell.
Yes.
Lots of people, especially in the Western world, they have a real problem with fathoming or accepting that hell really does exist.
Well, that does exist.
They have a problem accepting it, right?
Because there are those who really deserve to go in hell.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I said. I said, look, those who deserve to go to hell, you don't understand what their essence actually is. If you recognized what a true kafir is, not the average, you know, John or Joe walking down the street.
Yes, yes.
But an actual kafir, if you knew what was inside their soul, how psychopathic they are, how much they lack empathy, how much hatred and jealousy they have. Right.
How much brutality we've seen through history.
Asantum. But see, I was talking him through this and we came onto the idea of suffering. And this youth, he said something really remarkable. He said, do you know what? I think that Allah created suffering for a reason. And that reason is to reform us.
Exactly. Why? To shape us.
To shape us, right?
Yes.
So the more you suffer, you'll notice that the more you really do shine.
Yes.
Right?
Like the story of diamonds. They go through so much of pressures.
Right?
And scientifically speaking, we could say that the more they go through pressures, the more beautiful and precious they are.
It's the hardest substance that we know of.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Okay, so then he said, okay, that explains hell. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if suffering was created for our reformation, if we refuse to reform ourselves, the suffering will continue and it will get worse and worse and worse. And that's why they are in hell.
Yes, that's very true.
Isn't that profound?
Yes, of course.
See, one thing I've learned talking to youths is that you don't always need to give them answers. If you just ask them the right questions, they come up with the right answers themselves.
Little by little, step by step, we get to the conclusion that there is a reason behind suffering.
But since we're on the subject of patience, I came across a really scary verse of the Quran. It said that those who are put into hell, they'll be told, now, if you be patient or you be impatient, it will make no difference.
Exactly.
You are going to be in hell
now. The time
now.
Has passed.
Allah,
you have done what you have done.
Right? So even if a person says, you know, I'm going to be patient and endure this patiently, does not make a difference. You're in hell now.
Yes.
It doesn't change. Okay. So now let's come out of hell for a moment, come back to ourselves, right?
So we're speaking of the situations where everything is going out of control.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we talked about patience and we said that practicing patience is very difficult, but it has got some blessing in the end.
Absolutely. So there's this verse, hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yes.
He says that there are 2 days in a man's life, one which is with him and one which is against him.
Yes, against him.
As for the day which is with him, he should be thankful.
Don't be so happy.
He should be thankful.
Yes.
Right. And as for the day which is against him, he should be patient.
Patient, yes.
And I really do feel like, and I feel like a hypocrite for saying this because I don't practice it. May Allah give me the tawfiq to practice it.
Of course, to every single one of us.
Islam is actually showing us a kind of ilahi amin, a kind of attitude that we're supposed to develop.
Yes.
We don't have this attitude. You know, sister, I was talking to a brother who was actually anxious. He was suffering anxieties and stuff, right? And I told him this hadith, and he said, "Yeah, I know." I said, but then he goes, "But when I'm having a good day, I'm worried that it's going to turn bad
exactly,
any moment."
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
He's just worried.
That's one of my anxieties as well.
There you go. And we all
so
do
we
it.
Don't even enjoy the good days.
Exactly. Now, what is Ali alayhi salam telling us here? He's telling us when you're having a good day,
just be thankful.
Be thankful. Don't be worrying, oh, it's going to turn bad any moment. Yeah. Any moment now, a boulder is going to fall on my head. It's
you know,
start
as you
raining.
Get older and you're more experienced,
you become pessimistic.
Based on your experiences, you become pessimistic.
So what Islam is actually teaching us is, look, you're going to have ups and downs.
Yes.
Right? Enjoy the ups. Be thankful
and
for the ups.
And don't think about the downs.
Yeah, and when you're in the downs, be patient. You're going to go up again eventually,
yes,
right?
Yes, you're going to be out
but
of
we
it.
We don't practice that attitude we're supposed to have, you see?
Yes, exactly. Well, there is exactly where we're going for a little break. Hope you're not tired. Don't go anywhere. Stick to Youth Station. We'll be back as fast as the wind.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So welcome back to your own program, the most desired station in life, Youth Station. This is IRIB English Radio and Asma is talking to you here with us. We have Brother Muzaffar and we're discussing some very fascinating topics. We were talking about controlling things, coping with things, and not losing temper, which is a very difficult topic.
Mm-hmm. I actually had a question for you. So you went through that really difficult time.
Yes.
How did you get through it?
I just prayed a lot, and God is the only thing that you can clinch into. Mm-hmm. The only thing, the only thought that made me a little bit easier with the situation and alleviated me for a while was that God is watching us, and He, of course, would not leave the person who is lying on Him, who's leaning on Him, mm-hmm. who's trusting Him, who would never let you down. That was the only thing that made me stick together and go on.
Mm-hmm. According to Shahid Dasghib, Ayatollah Dasghib,
yes.
In his book Greater Sins, I believe he lists, after shirk is the number one greatest sin, according
yes,
to him.
Yes, and then despair.
The second one is despair.
Yes.
Despair, not alcohol, not riba,
yes,
not
and God has always told us not to go into that phase when you are hopeless and you think there is no hope.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing that could ever happen to a person.
Yeah.
Because that's the easiest thing when it creeps in your thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is very much around you. It ambushes you wherever you are. It's the easiest one, the one who is always beside you. But you shouldn't give it like leaves and let it grow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You should just go for hope. Hope is the last thing that die.
See, this despair is actually kufr.
Exactly.
It's actually disbelief.
Yes.
And you might not openly announce, or even to yourself announce, that I no longer believe in God.
Yes, na'udhu
billah,
yes.
Or I no longer believe in the Quran, I no longer believe in the Prophet. You might not ever say that or ever think that.
Yes.
But you see, just like we're talking about different attitudes, there is an attitude of Islam, which is that attitude of thankfulness and patience.
Yes, true.
There's an attitude of kufr.
Yes.
And that attitude is despair. It is to kind of let go and be like, yeah, God is there, but He ain't going to help me.
May He forgive us.
May He forgive us, honestly, because we've actually committed that great sin.
Well, just like this, in a blink of an eye, we get to the tail end of another topic in Youth Station. Hope you all enjoyed it wholeheartedly. This was IRIB English Radio, and I was Asma with Brother Muzaffar. We were super pleased to be with you. Until another session of Youth Station, I ask Allah to keep you all safe and sound. May Allah be always on your side.
in the limelight.
Shortage of electricity in the UK has forced utilities to pay people to turn off lights. There are reports that more than a million households in England, Scotland and Wales will be paid to cut back their electricity usage between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. to prevent blackouts. It comes amid warnings that energy supplies will be tighter than normal on one of the coldest days of the year. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Guardian, households and businesses in Britain will be paid to cut back on their electricity use between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. in the first real test of a national grid scheme. With temperatures dropping sharply, the electricity system operator hopes to reduce the strain on the grid by reducing consumption. The initiative, which has only been used as a test up to now, will take place during the early evening peak in Britain's energy demand. Through the smart meter, energy firms monitor usage every 30 minutes. Companies will give households 24 hours notice that a saving session is upcoming, and it will require customers to reduce their consumption by at least 30%. The greater the reduction, the greater the discount, which is automatically applied to the bill. Guardian also noted consumers are likely to use various methods to save power during the period, including making sure none of their devices are charging or pushing back meal times. A household's power use will be compared with their normal usage for that time of day, and they will receive about £3 for every kilowatt hour saved. Also, the website of RT wrote in this regard, more than a million UK homes and businesses are set to be paid to use less energy between 5 and 6 p.m. local time as part of the National Grid's Demand Flexibility Service aimed at preventing blackouts during periods of high usage. Customers with any of 26 UK energy suppliers can receive a small sum for cutting their usage below average levels during the one-hour period. National Grid announced recently, warning the country was facing tighter-than-normal supply margins. It is the first time the scheme has been implemented since it was announced last year, aside from tests. The amount received varies depending on how much the customer is able to cut back their usual usage. With about £3 doled out for every kilowatt hour saved, estimated payouts run between £6 and £20. In case additional power is needed, three coal-fired power plants that were set to be retired in September amid the UK's green energy transformation have been placed on standby. National Grid revealed recently, however, the utility stressed that customers should not worry, insisting it was only implementing DFS and tapping the coal plants as precautionary measures to maintain the buffer of spare capacity they need. National Grid has previously warned that rolling three-hour blackouts may be possible during January and February in case of energy shortages. The UK imports about half of its energy and costs have skyrocketed as Western sanctions on Russia severely limited the available supply for participating countries. Critics have dismissed DFS, arguing it requires too much work for minimal savings. Others see it as an unfair penalty levied against those without smart meters installed, as only those customers whose homes or businesses are equipped with the controversial devices can participate. However, project head Craig Dyke has big plans, declaring DFS will drive forward towards net zero and calling it the start of something much, much bigger. Meanwhile, local news websites have reported that homes across Sussex are still without power after outages on Sunday morning, January 22nd. While plenty of homes have been restored, hundreds still remain unconnected due to the power outages. Homes in Eastern Bourne, Seaford and Willingdon are still affected. Engineers from UK Power Networks, UKPN, have said they are working to fix the issue, and it was initially hoped that all homes would have power returned by 7:30 p.m. on January 26th. UKPN has said the outages in Eastern Bourne were caused by an underground electricity cable has faulted on high-voltage network, causing an area-wide power cut. Meanwhile, the outage in Seaford has been put down a faulty piece of equipment which controls the power to the homes.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-analysis. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of self-analysis in the Islamic lifestyle. When we say we need to analyze ourselves to know where we stand, where we were from, where we will go, and what steps do we need to take, these are all analyses that we need to do and then take the right step. If we do not take the right step, then we can be led astray. We can follow the wrong path if we do not know about ourselves, if we do not analyze ourselves, where do we stand? On the other hand, we know that there is a power which is known as nafs or aql, which is the self, soul, or the intellect, the pure intellect, which helps us to think, to ponder, to take us towards the right path. And on the other hand, we see that in the Quran, Allah has said, "Inna nafsa la'ammaratun bis-su'." Certainly the nafs or the soul or the self or the humans, it orders them to follow the evil. That is nafsul ammara, la'ammaratun bis-su'. It takes them towards the evil, except upon whom Allah has the mercy. Therefore, sometimes we might think like, what is this nafs then? It is better to know about the types of nafs. We have a nafs or aql which is known as nafs al-shahwani, which is the lustful nafs. The other kind of nafs is emotional nafs. And then the last is pure intellect or the pure nafs. Therefore, when in the different verses of the Quran, if it is praised, but like the nafs has been praised, it is about the pure nafs, pure intellect. And if the things are said which is against the nafs, then it is the other two kinds of nafs, which we must know and we must have knowledge of them, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of self-analysis in the Islamic lifestyle. When we do the self-analysis, we must know where do we stand. We must know the nafs that we have at the moment, the aql or the intellect which I am using at the moment. What kind of intellect is that? What kind of nafs is that? Therefore, we must know about these types. The major three types, which I have said before the break, it was the lustful nafs or the lustful intellect. And then we have the emotional intellect and then the pure intellect. The people who are involved in the lust, who say like, this is the only life that you have and there is no other life, so enjoy your life. They're always in the lust. They think about it. They have this nafs or the aql or the intellect which is full of lust and they only think about that. Even the analysis, the intellectual analysis when they do for themselves, they do it according to the lust. Therefore, we need to take ourselves out of this. On the other hand, there is another intellect which is known as the emotional intellect, emotional nafs. At the moment, we can see, for example, if there is a Muslim brother or sister, we deal with Islam emotionally. You know, our emotions are strong towards Islam. We do not bear any words against the Islam, but we do not think intellectually. We do not bring good reasons. We were Muslims because of our parents and we have this emotional relation with this. And that's why most of the Muslims, they have this nafs in them and they cannot analyze if anything goes against their emotions. On the other hand, the third category is pure intellect, which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is calling us towards, where Allah in the Quran says, أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ أَفَلَا تَتَفَكَّرُونَ. Don't you think? Don't you ponder? Don't you apply reasons? And these reasoning and pondering is the one which is aql mahz or the pure intellect, which can take us towards the perfection. Therefore, when analyzing ourselves, we first need to see that what kind of nafs do we have? Am I too emotional in the Islam? Am I too lustful? Or do I need to follow the pure intellect, inshallah? Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
In the U.S., one of the enduring mysteries surrounding the chaotic attempts to overturn Donald Trump's defeat in the 2020 presidential battle has been solved. Who made a secret $1 million donation to the controversial election audit in Maricopa County, Arizona? It turns out that person was Donald Trump himself. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of HillReporter.com has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump's deeply corrupt Save America PAC has been exposed for having secretly funneled $1 million to the sham audit in Arizona that Donald Trump supporters hoped would overturn the 2020 election. An analysis by the watchdog group documented traced funding for the Arizona audit back to the Save America PAC. Under Arizona law, electoral candidates are not allowed to fund vote recounts, which have to be financed with taxpayer dollars. Documenter's research shows that discussions around a possible payment from Donald Trump to the Arizona audit began in June of 2021. The group tracked the money as it first passed from Trump's fund through an allied conservative group and then onto a shell company, which in turn then handed the money to contractors and individuals involved in the Arizona audit. The January 6th House Select Committee also highlighted how the Save America PAC gave $1 million to the Conservative Partnership Institute, the CPI, whose top officials included Donald Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Cyber Ninjas, the Florida-based company that led the Arizona audit, disclosed in 2021 that $5.7 million of its budget came from several far-right groups invested in the Stop the Steal campaign to overturn Joe Biden's presidential win. Though the Cyber Ninjas audit was technically not a recount, it served a similar purpose and worked to hide the financial ties to Donald Trump. At the time, the same Republican leaders of the Arizona Senate who asked Cyber Ninjas to carry out the audit publicly denied that Donald Trump was involved, saying, "This absolutely has nothing to do with Donald Trump." But a further $1 million had been donated to the audit from an account controlled by Cleta Mitchell, a Republican election lawyer who advised Donald Trump during his lame duck period as he attempted to stay in office. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump reportedly made a secret $1 million donation to a partisan-driven audit of Arizona's election result in his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. It was Mr. Trump who largely bankrolled the discredited review of election results, which the president hoped would support his baseless claims that the election was stolen from him and swing the outcome in his favor. The revelation comes as it also emerged that Donald Trump's attorney, John Eastman, is facing disciplinary charges and potential disbarment in California over his involvement in the former president's efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. This weekend, Donald Trump is set to begin his 2024 presidential campaign trail this weekend, with back-to-back appearances in New Hampshire and in South Carolina on Saturday, 28th of January. It comes at the end of a week where parent company Meta announced that it would reinstate his Facebook and Instagram accounts in the coming weeks. A $1 million donation to the group responsible for the sham audit of Arizona's Maricopa County election results in 2020 came from Donald Trump's Save America PAC, according to analysis of publicly available data by the watchdog group Documented. The analysis was based on campaign finance disclosures, tax filings, and communications records obtained by another transparency group. It contradicts statements made by the former president's associates, who denied he had anything to do with the effort to audit election results in Arizona's most populous county, the Maricopa County. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. An analysis by the watchdog group Documented has traced funding for the Arizona audit back to Donald Trump's Save America PAC. The group tracked the cash as it passed from Donald Trump's fund through an allied conservative group and from there to a shell company, which in turn handed the money to contractors and individuals involved in the Arizona audit. Cyber Ninjas, the Florida-based company that led the Arizona audit, disclosed in 2021 that $5.7 million of its budget came from several far-right groups invested in the Stop the Steal campaign to overturn Joe Biden's presidential victory. It was later divulged that a further $1 million had supported the audit from an account controlled by Cleta Mitchell, a Republican election lawyer who advised Donald Trump as he plotted to subvert the 2020 election. But who gave the $1 million to Mitchell? In September of 2021, as Cyber Ninjas was preparing to deliver its findings, the New York Times reported that unnamed officials had denied that Donald Trump had played any part in securing the funds. Republican leaders of the Arizona Senate, who asked Cyber Ninjas to carry out the audit, also publicly denied that Donald Trump was involved, saying, "This absolutely has nothing to do with Trump." Documented's analysis pierces through that denial. Basing its research on corporate, tax, and campaign finance filings, as well as emails and text messages obtained by the nonpartisan accountability group American Oversight, through public records requests, the watchdog has followed the money on its circuitous route from the former U.S. president's PAC to the Arizona Review. Cyber Ninja's widely lambasted inquiry was focused on Maricopa County, Arizona's most populated area. Joe Biden won that county by 45,109 votes. The purported investigation was suffused with wild conspiracy theories, including the claim that bamboo fibers found in ballot sheets proved they had been printed in Asia. The review was decried even by local Republicans in Arizona as a grift disguised as an audit. Bill Gates, the Republican vice chair of the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors at the time of the Cyber Ninjas audit, said he was disappointed but not surprised by the revelation that Donald Trump had helped to pay for it. "I have no problem with audits," Bill Gates said. "What I have a problem with is an audit that is undertaken with a goal in mind, and that is literally being funded by one of the candidates. This is absolutely what we do not want to happen." Bill Gates pointed out that under Arizona law, electoral candidates are not allowed to fund vote recounts, which have to be financed with taxpayer dollars. Though the Cyber Ninjas review was technically not a recount, it served a similar purpose. At the very least, it is highly hypocritical for the Arizona State Senate to have allowed the audit to be funded in this fashion, Bill Gates said.
It's بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Enmity of arrogant powers towards Iran originates from Leather's anti-arrogance and colonialist spirit. This is the part of a televised speech delivered on January 9, 2022 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the anniversary of an uprising by the people of Qom on January 9, 1978.
The January 9th uprising was a brilliant combination of zeal and rationality. These events form our history and we must learn from them. But a nation that is alive does not look only at the past, it also looks at the next step to be taken and the horizons ahead in every stage of its history. In accordance with the developments of its time and in accordance with the duties that fall on that nation. We must identify the task to be done at the present moment. We must determine our steps for the future. And we must identify the horizon, fix our eyes on it, and move towards it with all our strength and power. In this way, the movement will be successful in the real sense of the word. In addition, it will achieve the final victory, which is first of all a pure life for the Iranian nation. If others learn from it, and if it becomes a model, this is another issue. But we should achieve prosperity and an Islamic lifestyle, which is a pure life that has worldly comforts, has both religion and welfare, and is good for both the body and the soul.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
At the present time, we are in the middle of the path. Of course, part of the way has been travelled up until today. The Iranian nation has worked hard and we have moved forward a little. But we should identify what our duty is today and what our duty and horizons are for the future as well. Sometimes one sees that they carry out polls. For example, they ask the opinion of the people. But these things do not show the truth of the Iranian nation. The truth of the Iranian nation is shown by the funeral of Martyr Soleimani. It is these things that show the mood of the Iranian nation and what their sentiments and feelings are. In other words, in order to understand the reality and feelings of this nation, a domain as great and vast as the country and people of Iran is needed. Therefore, the polls that some groups carry out here and there, some of which have ulterior motives behind them, and some of which are innocent, cannot be a criterion in this regard.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me. You've done for
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, tempers are running high in Pakistan over the repeated Islamophobic incidents by some European countries in recent days. Outraged Pakistanis took to the streets of the capital Islamabad after Friday prayers to condemn the West for what they call its malicious anti-Islamic agenda.
Burning of Muslims' holy book by these Western nations proved that Islamophobic acts were not an expression of freedom of speech, but extremism. Sadly, extremism exists and is growing everywhere in Europe. It's time for European nations to think about who's promoting extremism by desecrating other religions.
Protesters chanted slogans and vented their anger against the silence of the West regarding repeated incidents of desecration of Holy Quran and the Prophet Muhammad. Demonstrators also called on Muslim nations to boycott European goods over what they describe as the West's insolent behavior.
We strongly condemn the blasphemous incident of desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden. The incident is the worst and most heartbreaking act in Europe. There is no room for such a sad incident in a civilized society.
Demonstrators are demanding that the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, known as OIC, raise its voice against the growing intolerance against Islam and anti-Muslim acts across the globe.
It's time for the OIC to play its role in urging Muslim nations to stand united against Western conspiracies. Europe wants to ignite Muslims by doing such blasphemous acts. Once we are united, Europe will not dare to repeat such Islamophobic acts.
The countrywide rallies came days after Pakistan denounced what it described as the abhorrent act of desecration of the Quran in Sweden and the Netherlands, saying such acts disrespect Muslims across the globe.
Condemnations continue to pour in from Muslim countries across the world. Yemen, Qatar, along with other Islamic nations, joined Iran, Pakistan, and Turkey to denounce the desecration. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
People of Afghanistan are extremely upset about the deplorable and shocking act of some extremist individuals in Sweden and Holland in desecrating the Holy Quran, which is taken as a disrespect towards not just the Holy Book of Muslims, but all holy scriptures, by tearing the Holy Quran and setting it on fire. The primitive and uncivilized act of a bunch of radical elements in Europe has raised robust condemnation from Afghan people against such abominable act.
They claim human rights and still burn the Holy Quran. It looks like it's only for themselves. We want the Swedish government to punish the perpetrator of this action and also ask Islamic countries to be united against this action.
Even when such people insult the Holy Quran, the book's value increases for us. If we are not burning their holy books in response today, it is because of the teaching of the Holy Quran to have a peaceful relation with all people.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has also condemned the awful action and called for punishment of its perpetrators in Sweden and Holland.
We ask the government of Sweden to punish the perpetrators of this crime and do not let such individuals to act in provocative and heinous ways against the holy books.
The Holy Quran is simply a fundamental element to unite Muslims, so that Afghan politicians from various groups and ethnicities, including former administrators and current statesmen at the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, break ranks with the disgusting radical act towards the Holy Book committed by some extremist groups in Europe, and roundly condemn the disgusting